You're listening to a Whales Are Whales production.
You're also listening to Whales.
Visit whalesorewhales.com for more projects and shows like this one.
And welcome to Third Person, a storytelling podcast. This is episode 9, The Problem with Puppets, aka Characters and Protagonists Lacking Agency in Stories, and we will define what that means later on. I am your host, Brian, as always, and joining me today, as always, is Steven, as always. Hello, Steven.
Hello. Today, Brian, as always, I chose to be here.
And Abigail, as always, Inslee, as always.
As always, I'm always not a fan of redundancy, always.
I am so confused now. But yeah, we talk about stories on this year's podcast. That's what we do, right, Steven?
Most of the time.
Most of the time?
I mean, you know, we'll have our breaks in coherent thought, but yeah, that's the idea.
Sometimes we just argue, and it's fun.
Like, about Frozen. That's interesting.
But normally we get the shenanigans out of the way.
That is also arguably a story, though I think Abigail may disagree with that definition.
I disagree with that definition.
So, all right, in the spirit of talking about stories, we're going to go in our first segment here, which is the wonderfully named, What Have You Been Narratively Involved With? Steven, what sorts of stories have you been partaking in?
Narratively involved with? Oh, okay, yeah. First on my list is, could you like give me a drum roll or something?
Nope.
Okay. First on my list is
Abigail.
I'm sorry.
I'm host.
He already denied. It's, I feel like I have my two parents and one is giving me candy and the other is saying no candy. And I'm really confused right now.
It's our good host, bad host. We're trying to get you to confess.
Exactly. I'm secretly trying to take over this podcast, Steven.
I gladly confess.
It's not secret. You proclaimed it was your podcast before we started recording and kicked me and Steven out.
I did. Well, and then I invited you back. So now it's mine.
Wait, what? How does that? Okay.
Never mind.
I'm sure there's a really clever historical, kingdom takeover I could reference, but I can't think of one. So instead, I'm just going to tell you that I've been playing The Legend of Zelda.
It's like Majora's.
Gosh, Brian.
You know what? I haven't been able to finish a sentence in like 2 minutes.
All right. Would you like to finish a 2-minute sentence?
I have been playing The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Oh, yeah, that's a very interesting story that we talked about quite a bit on our last episode. Wait, our episode before our last episode on Train Station at 8.
We did indeed. We did it that. And I would love to actually have a whole third-person episode on the story of Majora's Mask.
I suppose I should play cool. That one.
What do you know about Majora's Mask, if anything, Abigail?
It is a game. Mm-hmm. It is Legend of Zelda.
Yes.
It happens before the Ocarina of Time.
Okay, you were so close.
I mean, or at least it was released before the Ocarina of Time, yes?
No,
it was released directly after.
Correct.
Yes. Yay! I know things!
Just needed to give you a little bit of encouragement there. Well, here's the short version. The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time was, of course, the smash hit wonder that everyone loved and played, and although it was narratively simple, it was narratively lovely. It was a classic tale about a hero's journey, and there was an evil King Ganondorf, and there is a fairy guiding you along the way, and Princess Zelda, and an awesome twist near the end, and it was fantastic, one of the best games ever made.
Wow.
Then they turned around, with almost no development time, and made a sequel, which is not only the strangest Zelda game to ever exist, but one of the strangest games I've ever played. And essentially, the old familiar Link is walking through the woods with his horse, Epona, and meets a strange little fellow called the Skull Kid, who has an unnerving mask with big eyes, known as Majora's Mask. He gets thrown into this other world, this mirror image almost of your familiar Hyrule, where everyone you've met in your past journey is still there, but they're different people, and the town you live in is going to be crushed by a giant moon with a creepy face. And it only gets weirder from there. So basically, you have 3 days of real time, not our time, sped up video game time, to save the world before it is crushed by the moon. but you can set back time. So you're forced to relive these 3 days over and over again, until either you quit or you save the world. But the real story comes from all of the people who live there, and all of them slowly coming to realize that they're going to die, unless they get out of this town. And some of them refuse to leave because they have duties there, and some of them have to watch from a distance as their livelihood and families are destroyed. And it's a strange, dark, almost fairy tale like story that deserves a lot of exploration.
They take another world ending scenario, and it's a surprisingly sobering look at mortality with it instead of just a, you know, plot device.
Interesting. Yeah. I have a question about this game. So you get to relive those 3 days over and over again. Does everybody in the town do that, or do they only experience it once each time?
All of the people in the town are on a set schedule. So
they think it's the first time it's happening. They do not. They are not going back.
Specifically, in real time, like at 3 p.m., the mailman will be delivering mail at the specific house.
And so the logistical reason they did this is because they couldn't develop like 2 weeks or, you know, an infinite amount of schedules for these townspeople, especially back on the Nintendo 64, and make them seem believable and good. So like they would have had to loop what they were doing.
Perfectly believable for everyone to be doing exactly the same thing anyways. I mean, unless Link is directly interacting with people and that would change everything. But, you know, that makes sense.
Yes, exactly. But like, if they wanted them to do unique things, like these two people need to meet to discuss this thing, like they wouldn't do that infinitely looped. They would do that one time. Okay. So the game wanted to handcraft 3 days of these people's schedules for you, then be able to interact with their schedules and solve their problems and that sort of thing. And I'm guessing they then introduced the time mechanic as a way to create that, which is an interesting example of gameplay mechanics and narrative coming together to create a cohesive whole.
I mean, I'd love to have an episode on gameplay mechanics and narrative, or the power of metaphor. This game is just rife with metaphors. Or the...
What about metapods?
Not metapods. You gotta go back to the old Pokemon games for your metapod fix. I don't know what that is.
I don't either, actually.
But I do, but I'm not telling you.
Well, let's move on to something that we do know all about, which is Supernatural.
Yeah. Yay. You've been watching Supernatural. Isn't it a fun show?
Yes. I just finished an episode minutes before coming in here.
Oh, really? Which one?
It was a fun little story about a woman whose eyes were cut out. And so then
Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Then she died and came back to haunt everyone else.
Yeah, that wasn't my favorite of the episodes, but I thought it was a pretty solid, good one.
I think that the show is good at doing creepy ladies in your peripheral vision.
That one was a lot scarier than the monsters had been for a while.
Yeah. I mean, it felt maybe a little too much like the first episode, which was creepy lady, but it was creepy. There were points where I didn't quite want to watch because I knew people's eyes were going to start bleeding.
Yeah, that was a little much.
But it was.
I almost like it when a show will do that. It'll get to the point where it's like, well, I need to close my eyes because it's too much. And then I'm like, oh, well, see, now I know that it's decently scary.
Exactly. But I was scared to close my eyes. I didn't really want to think about my eyes at all in general for that entire episode.
Yeah.
That sounds like an X-File episode. There's one where everyone is like scratching their own eyes out for some reason. I don't remember why. I think it was because of like a possessed doll. But then again, I may be putting those, two episodes in one. I'm not sure.
There's also an episode of Angel wherein someone stabs his own eye out, which is quite disturbing.
Oh, really?
There's an episode
that.
In Buffy in which someone gets an eye stabbed out.
Oh, gosh. Not true. Yeah, that was horrible.
By Nathan Fillion.
Well, speaking of Nathan Fillion, it also reminded me of 2x2 Eyes of, or Hands of Blue, pardon me, which is also unnerving for me to watch. But,
yeah, absolutely. Yep. That's really creepy.
Regardless, Supernatural is creepy as well, and by Brian's recommendation, I have been enjoying it. It's still
I've been recommending you enjoy it.
Yes, I watched an episode and I wasn't really into it, and he says, I recommend that you enjoy this.
That's actually somewhat similar to a conversation.
I really have.
Oh.
But,
that's kind of a good way to look at life, you know what? There's this thing that I hate Brussels sprouts, you know, but I recommend that you enjoy them. Oh, these are awesome now!
Precisely, yeah.
Mind over matter.
Exactly.
This episode was especially predictable. Brian, I don't know. Sorry, these are like minor halfway spoilers for one episode in a show that has 10 seasons, so get over it, I suppose. But like in this episode, like several scenes before it happened, I'm like, okay, so what's going to happen is since you have to chant the Bloody Mary 3 times in a mirror, and then she'll come and gouge your eyes out, and no one believes the story. someone is going to try to prove that the story is wrong, and it's going to happen to them, and then later on, someone is going to do it again, but do it on purpose to trap Bloody Mary. And it's
of course, all of
those things were so obvious from the, the first.
That's absolutely true. I mean, the plot is not going to, I mean, of course, the person doing it on purpose, like, how could that not happen? Especially since that show has the formula of second person gets killed, then third person almost gets killed and then doesn't. That's why we named third person.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
I hope it doesn't
not.
Get killed.
It is not.
You know what would be funny though? Can I just put something in here real quick?
Yeah.
What would be funny if, you know, I like to think these things. Whenever I watch something, I oftentimes go, like, when I watch something that I think was predictable, I'll sit there and go, how could I have made that better? Mm-hmm. And in my head, I'm just going, it'd be kind of funny if that first person who was like, oh, haha, it doesn't exist, let's try to prove that it's not wrong, does it, happens to, like, get run over by a car or something the next day, and then Bloody Mary comes around like, what? Where'd he go? That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah,
change the entire rest of the story.
Yeah. The Supernatural is not yet good at being unconventional like that at all.
But it is a quality show. I'll give it that much. I enjoy my time watching it.
The monster design is really good compared to, like, you know, Buffy. Not a high standard, but it's still...
Well, like when Bloody Mary, spoiler, ending spoiler of the Bloody Mary episode, like, crawl out of the mirror. That was a really cool
effect. It was
well
done. Also, I like how they tied Bloody Mary into not just killing people, but killing... And again, these are mild spoilers for one episode.
We're spoiling the whole episode. I'm sorry.
But again, it's one episode that isn't even a strong story out of a whole TV show. But I thought it was interesting how she latches onto people who have secrets.
Yeah. So you're
which
kind
then
of thinking.
Tied in, yeah, go ahead.
You're thinking the whole time, okay, someone said the Bloody Mary chant, but who here has a secret? Well, I bet she has a secret. And it's like, oh, if Bloody Mary's coming after her, then she does. And it kind of adds another mental game
right.
to it.
And I appreciate how they tied it into a plot arc they had for Sam.
Yes.
I didn't think it was a super interesting plot.
And Sam's secret is that.
Yeah, we don't have to go into that. But I thought that was a good idea.
Run the whole show for me, why don't you guys?
I also appreciate how he just wouldn't tell Dean. Like, you expect him to just, you know, tell him, but he's like, nope, I'm going to do this, but I'm not going to tell you what the secret is. I thought that was interesting. Even when the episode ended, I believe he still didn't tell him.
So this is a new show Brian and I have both been watching.
It's not a new show.
A new show for
it's
us.
It's like 10 years old.
Yeah, we're always behind the curve.
Exactly.
But you had it recommended to you by a friend, and you recommended that I like it after that. And the kind of our conversations have often been about how Brian thinks that Dean, one of the two brothers and protagonists of the show, is this extremely endearing, likable, like instantly likable character. And I just haven't really seen that in the first few episodes.
I didn't like him.
Oh, really? That's
not really.
How much have you watched of it, Abigail?
I've only watched a few episodes. I watched like the first three and then I went, ugh, this is a cop show, and I stopped watching.
It's more of a detective show, but I guess it's the same thing.
They're the same format.
They are. It's a procedural, really it's a procedural mystery.
Exactly.
Procedural,
you know, person, thing happens, let's investigate. First guess is wrong, let's investigate again. Second guess is right, everything's okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I remember seeing him though, and I thought he was kind of annoying, I guess. And I'm sure he gets better with time because I only saw the first like rough sides of him because I'm pretty sure at first he's supposed to be a big contrast with Sam, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Because Sam was kind of softer and more, less of a go-getter. And I did like Dean, but I wouldn't say that he was like super likable.
Sure. Yeah,
that was kind of the same reaction I had. And usually Brian and I, you know, have very similar opinions about this kind of thing. Like, I think that we would put characters, like, especially since we like Buffy so much and we agree with almost everything in that show. I thought I would like Dean more.
Mm-hmm.
And also it's tripping me out how his name is Dean and his brother is Dean from Gilmore Girls, which I was watching
that
right.
It's
a weird. Yeah.
But
absolutely.
As it goes on, especially in this episode, Brian, I'm starting to come around a little bit to your way of seeing it. I love his kind of facial expressions when he's guilty and when he's trying to get out of stuff.
He's a good actor.
Bluffing the cops.
He's a really good actor.
Yeah.
He's a good actor, has a lot of enthusiasm for the role. But yeah, Steven, we typically share opinions except when you're wrong. So.
Yes, that
makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I totally get why other people wouldn't find his character great. I can't point to like fantastic writing behind him. I just immediately enjoyed and kind of, I wouldn't say related with necessarily, but connected with his character very early on. So I've been enjoying the show. That said, it needs to stop being rote, but it's going to be a long time before that hits. I haven't watched too much more of it since we last talked. I've been kind of taking a break to do a lot of video gaming with my spare time instead. So anything else, Steven?
Well, speaking of video games, I've been playing more World of Warcraft. There's been a big patch that just unleashed, which changed the character models for the Blood Elves, finally. They finally caught up with that.
Nice.
Since I have three Blood Elf characters, that matters to me deeply. And a little note about World of Warcraft, because I realized that I was getting kind of in a rut. I was just going to the same city with the same character, talking to the same people, and it's
solving crimes.
Solving crimes. Well, actually, yes, I hired a private investigator recently. I'm turning it into a procedural, basically.
Yep.
Oh, man.
So I've kind of decided to expand my horizons a little bit, play some other characters, and it's really opened up the old WoW canvas, which is great.
Neato.
And last thing is I've still been working my way through Golem and the Genie. Still really, really like that book. You don't really have a whole lot more to say about it since I don't want to spoil anything, so.
I just have one question about that book.
Go ahead.
Would it be better if it was Golem and the Genie from, like, Lord of the Rings?
No, because the goal, well, actually, yeah, you're probably right.
I wasn't stating an opinion.
I just realized the connection between his name Golem and a golem. That's kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
Hey, you know,
he's named after his cough, technically, but I have a feeling that was a very deliberate choice on Jared.
I don't know. Tolkien isn't really a person who thinks about names a whole lot.
No, he's not a deep thinker. He like turned that around in a few months.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's the guy who named his main character Aragorn. I mean, give me a break.
Like, geez, like, everybody knows that's the dragon kid, and it just, I feel like Lord of the Rings, don't tell anyone, but I feel like it was just kind of stealing from the Aragorn series.
Well,
and
mostly
like,
from,
like, Star
and
Wars.
D&D. Like it took everything from D&D.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong. It's more.
But I just think the characters are endearing, you know, well acted, pretty good, you know.
Yeah.
They're fun. They're fun, if not particularly original.
I love Andrew Circus.
All right, let's please move
Abigail.
On and stop cursing this name. I love this.
All right.
You know, if you say J.R.R. Tolkien three times in a mirror, he comes in to read you some literary works of his.
Looking at your notes here, you have had a very active week or 2 weeks for stories.
Oh, yeah. So active that I thought today, shoot, I don't think I've read anything or even watched anything, and I didn't notice.
Well, you've lost your credentials for the show.
I know. See, here's my thing, though. I'm a writer. Everybody knows I'm a writer. So sometimes I will go back and forth between what I spend my time on, and if I'm not spending my time consuming media, I'm usually creating it.
Oh, well, so, then that more than pays up for it.
Haha. But yeah, so since I haven't really been reading anything, I just thought I would tell you a little bit about what I've been writing, or not exactly what I've been writing, but how I've been writing it, because that's the more
fun part. Have you been using a keyboard?
I have, actually.
Smart move.
Yeah, that was one of the first things I did, in fact. I'm glad it worked out. I was considering using my typewriter, but I thought it'd take too long.
Yeah, and no USB hookup for that, so it's difficult.
Yeah, I really need to get one of those you can put an iPad on. Anyways.
Yeah.
Parker introduced me recently to some writing games, one called Pass the Paragraph, which has been really fun, and it's actually was a really great way to get me out of some of my creative ruts, because when you're writing a story, you're kind of sitting there, you decide what happens, you move on, whatnot, and I've played writing games with others before, but I've never played one so intensely as I played this weekend, but we started playing a game called Pass the Paragraph, in which, you know, he'd write a paragraph, I'd write a paragraph, and we went on that way. And it was really fun because I'm finding myself, as the story goes forward, one, I'm like, oh, I love this story and I want to see what happens. Oh, no, it's my turn. That means I have to figure out what happens. But I will write, like, one little thing, one interesting thing that happens. I'll try to do my best to surprise him because my only other reader right now is the other writer. So doing my best to surprise the writer while still keeping this in the same vein of what's happening, whatnot. And then when he comes, he completely turns the story around again. And it's really, really, really fun. And actually, as I was going through and reading one of our creations, one of the more serious ones, I was very impressed because we made a really cool story that I am actually upset at the moment that we haven't finished it yet. And I'll probably request to go do that because I really want to know what happens. And it was an interesting exercise. So for anybody who's a writer out there, I would suggest trying that with friends. Try to make it seriously. Try to do it as well as you can. But you'll find a story that is so intriguing and so surprising at every turn that your reader will be like thoroughly enjoying it the whole way through because it's not predictable at all.
That's
so anyways,
amazing.
That is
probably the closest explanation I've heard outside of role-playing to describe what it's actually like to role-play with another good writer.
Yeah, that's
exceedingly
similar
to what
I was thinking.
And that's 100% the feeling you get out of it.
That's like my favorite way to write, that on-the-cuff working with someone else, constantly trying to not really one-up each other, but work with each other and surprise each other. That's
really
exactly.
And then have to make the other person adapt.
Because you don't, I mean, if sometimes you can fall into the trap of one writer is saying something, like especially if you're doing the three-word game, which is the same thing, only it's every three words, which is another one that's been a favorite of ours just because the stories are so stupid that come out of that one.
Yeah.
But there's like a trap that you can fall into where one writer is starting a sentence and the other person can obviously see where it's supposed to end. And so they continue with that. And that way you fall back into basically one person is writing the whole story and it's just not nearly as good as if the two writers are trying to surprise each other.
Yep. I totally agree with you.
Do you
put
know
it in
this,
a direction the other person doesn't expect.
Do you know what this kind of reminds me of?
Nope.
When we used to do the, live choose your own adventure horror stories.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh,
those were way better than Supernatural episodes.
They really were. We'd stay up like late into the night and one of us would be like the assigned storyteller. And so you know, it'd be like, you're on an old country road and listening to the pop hits of the 80s on your radio. And, you know, shadows are being cast all over from the trees outside. What do you want to do? And then you get some choices. And we pretty much just like make it up as we go, try to give some fair choices, try to think of what would happen before the person chooses the choices. So it's a little, you know, a little more fair-minded. And then something, inevitably, we always knew there was one psychotic, like, murderer out there, but we never knew who it was, and that was really fun.
So yeah, those sorts of games are super fun. We need to do a segment sometime where we do a live version of
a segment, like a whole episode
of Pass the Paragraph and see what we get out of that.
That would be really fun. It's a little challenging because you kind of have to sit there and think about it sometimes, but I'm sure that
I could edit out some
stressful.
Of the thoughts.
Even more stressful off the cuff.
Already so bad.
It's pretty fun. It comes up with some good stories, so I would suggest people doing that. Other than that, I've watched a couple episodes of Friends. I've been trying to catch up on some life stuff, but I've been doing a lot of interesting nonfiction storytelling, which I don't know if that is
nonfiction storytelling.
I do a lot of nonfiction for my actual job. And I write a lot of like emails and things like that, but I've been writing a couple of ebooks recently. And so I've been looking up some interesting stories to tell. And so it's been interesting to develop that craft as well. So for instance, today I just told a story about Steven Spielberg, and basically his interaction with college, which was very interesting.
Is it a true story?
It is a true story. It is a true story.
Because otherwise that would be libel or slander.
Yeah, no, that'd be bad. But no, I was telling a story about Steven Spielberg in college, kind of like, to prove a point of like, you know, how you can use college, to move forward in things and whatnot. So it's been very interesting to try. It's been a new experience as well to try and say, okay, here's the point I want to illustrate. How am I going to illustrate it in a way that's interesting and will catch a reader's attention?
Right.
And so doing that and apparently being successful, I've been getting some really good feedback from what I've been doing. It's also another really good exercise. Cause as a fiction writer, I never really had to worry about that. But when you're, you know, once you start writing copy and you're actually selling things, you want to sell to people without them knowing that you're selling to them. And so it's kind of an interesting experience.
Yeah, I can see how that would be an interesting marrying of the two concepts.
Yeah,
I'd like to read that stuff. It sounds cool.
Oh, yeah. I'll send it over. But yeah, it's kind of cool.
Let's see here. So the last person here is me.
Hello.
I think. Hi.
Hi.
Story-wise, it's pretty much just been one thing for me recently. Apart from talking to Steven about Supernatural and TV shows, I have been playing a lot of Dragon Age Inquisition, which I talked about on the recent episode of the Whales Are Whales podcast, which you can find at whalesarewhales.com. It's a podcast where...
It's not out yet, though.
Is it not out?
No.
Awkward.
Is it not? Oh, you're right. We delayed it a week.
Yeah.
Shoot.
So it's well, not even
you can
announced.
Find, you can find on Wednesday. It's announced now.
It's announced
okay.
Now.
On Wednesday, which is like 3 days from now, you can find an episode where just everyone who makes shows for Whales and Whales shows up and talks about anything.
Yeah.
It's really a free form place for us just to get to know each other, keep up with each other, and talk about what we don't have a specific podcast for at the moment, which is just whatever we want.
You can find
whatever
that about
time constraint.
You can find that about the stuff that we talk about when we're not on the show. Like when we don't have to stick to a topic and be, you know, somewhat together, yeah. Intelligent.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Exactly. So you can check that out on whalesofwhales.com on Wednesday. So just in a few days now, and I think you will heartily enjoy it if you enjoy us on the show. If you just enjoy the content on the show and hate us, then probably don't.
Yeah, don't.
Also, go listen to Writing Excuses.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so I've been playing a lot of Dragon Age Inquisition. Really cool storytelling in that game. I actually go quite in-depth in the Whales or Whales podcast, so I'm not going to go too in-depth here, but I'm liking it a lot. I think it tells a more subtle, broad story than the other Dragon Age games. Definitely less character-focused and more world-focused, which is not necessarily a bad or good thing. It's just different than Dragon Age 2, which was like an incredibly in-depth, like, personal character-focused story.
Yeah.
What's interesting is there is an element that was alluding to stuff that happened to Varric in Dragon Age 2 mm-hmm. in Inquisition. And I'm like, they're going into a weird amount of detail about this adventure Varric went on, but I never, you know, played or saw this. I beat Dragon Age 2 and yeah. None of this was ringing a bell. And I'm like, this is way too much detail. This sounds way too much like an actual campaign in an RPG. There must have been DLC that did this.
Yeah.
So I looked it up and there was DLC that went through this adventure that is absolutely critical to the plot in Inquisition.
Whoa.
That's
like
annoying.
The backbone of the plot.
Wow.
Which DLC?
Legacy.
Legacy. Is that the Legacy. One that gives you, like, the prince dude?
No. There's one that gives you the prince, exiled prince as a companion. There's one that is just a side story where Felicia Day voices some rogue character. And the third one is about defeating this ancient threat that lives in a Grey Warden prison. And that is the one that eventually plays in Inquisition's
plot. I don't
think
I own that. Maybe I'd best buy it.
It's standalone, so you can, like, play, not standalone, but it's like a separate campaign. Okay. So I'm going back in Dragon Age 2 and now playing that campaign.
What's it like? Well, that's another conversation.
That's a more game related topic that I'll talk about, probably in the Whales and Rails podcast. But in terms of the story, it's really interesting to jump back in the world of Dragon Age 2 because, like, I don't think the setting is very interesting. I don't think the main plot line here is very interesting. It's, mostly just another, you know, cultists are being cultists. But the character writing
that was a working title for Whales for Whales before we finally decided on our current one.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that you went with what you went with. I think it's a little bit more creative.
And masks are true purpose.
Yes,
a little
exactly.
better.
But, metaphor, find it.
The character writing is so good and so personal and so funny in the Dragon Age 2 that partially because they can get more personality across to your main character, they give you more of like a set character you're playing as. And because they do that, your character delivers much like funnier, more personable lines. And in addition, like just your party members are so well acted and have such, they really focus more on the humor and the interpersonal relationships in Dragon Age 2. I'm just immediately seeing that in this DLC.
That just gave me a good idea for an episode.
Which is?
What about an episode about, like the tone of character dialogue and speech and language? Like, one example might be how in Star Wars, even though it's like sci-fi and fantasy, everyone's speaking with like slang that you could hear in the 70s.
That's a good point.
You know, you go to Lord of the Rings and they're very, very strict with how they speak. It has to be this kind of quasi-old English kind of fantasy standard. It can be a fun episode.
Dragon Age Inquisition just seems, in general, much more subtler. Oh my gosh. I shouldn't be on a podcast.
Brian, you've officially been cooked off for the second time.
Dang it. Much more subtlest. It's a more subtle, more, everyone feels like more like adults than in Dragon Age 2, if that makes sense. It almost felt like Dragon Age 2 is kind of almost a coming of age story.
So you're saying Dragon Age 2 is the Muppets babies
No.
Okay.
It felt like in that, everyone is figuring out their interpersonal relationships. It feels like in Dragon Age Inquisition, everyone knows there are problems bigger than themselves. So they're more of debating the high-minded ideals of like, what should we do with the mages and what should we do here? And that's more where the disagreements stem from about greater causes instead of the disagreements stemming from you just kind of arguing amongst yourselves.
Right.
And again, it's not necessarily better or worse. It's just, I'm surprised at how different the tones of the games are.
That's very cool.
Dragon Age Inquisition reminds you much more of Dragon Age Origins than Dragon Age 2 in terms of that. But yeah, it's really cool to see them contrast, and I'm enjoying both of them a lot, and it has been very interesting to go back to Dragon Age 2 again after spending, you know, a lot of hours in Inquisition and see how the storytelling styles differ but keep threads. I mean, in some cases, even the same characters. So it's cool. But yeah, that's been all my storytelling. Or reading story experience.
Well, we still have half an episode to talk about our topic.
Yep. So we can move on to our main topic.
Main topic.
Dun, dun, dun.
Actually, we're out of time.
Okay.
folks. And that is the puppet problem, aka protagonist agency in stories. The first question here that's important is what is a story? No, really. what is agency? In quote marks. Steven.
Do you want to leave my joke answer or my real answer?
Let's get the joke answer out of the way.
Okay, the joke answer is, well, I think the character that I can best choose to represent agency in storytelling is Don Draper, because he runs one of the finest ad agencies
that's pretty bad.
But my real answer is, I guess the easiest way to say is, agency is having the freedom to make your own decisions rather than a writer's plot making them for you. At least that's my personal definition.
Right. It feels like the character has control over what he's going to do. The character is making decisions that affect the story rather than the story making decisions that affect the character.
And Supernatural is a great, you know, or really any show that kind of feels like a, you know, like a serialized TV show or especially a procedural, because those plots are so standalone and so kind of tightly wound that oftentimes, well, almost all the time, every person involved in the story has a plot point and they serve that one plot point
for those characters
forever.
They created, we need investigators. How do we find a way for the story to force them to do investigations every single episode? You don't feel like Dean could make the choice to stop investigating and then just go do it. Mm-hmm. You feel like something in the story would rope him back
into
investigating.
Well, even more
again.
So, the side characters who only appear in one episode, in one mystery, and then they drive, you know, then the brothers drive to a different town. Those characters are the kind of the epitome of, you know, plot devices. And I'm not even saying this is a good or a bad thing, but that's kind of what I mean by when you don't have agency.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we had brought up in one of our older comics. Oh, man. one of our older podcasts. I don't remember which one, but we were talking about superhero plots, because that's one of the best examples of characters not having agency, because the plot tends to drive everything that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point, actually.
Pretty much.
Especially when you consider that so many superhero plots are, retelling old ones.
Oh god, yes.
And then it becomes,
and then you really feel like it.
You know what's going to happen, so what's even keeping you engaged? And that's I accidentally stumbled upon a good point inspired by you, Abigail, which is to say that why are, you know, the origin stories that you've already heard before interesting? Because you know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So there's almost no agency. So that
it's kind of different. I wouldn't say that a retelling necessarily removes the agency. Because one, usually when you're doing a retelling, so people do this with fairy tales all the time. Everybody knows how it's supposed to end up. One of the ways that they keep those fresh is by changing minor parts of the plot. And so it's a little bit different. And honestly, I'd be okay with them. I hear that they're rebooting Spider-Man for the third time. I would be okay with them changing pieces of the plot because I already know the plot. I already know exactly everything that happens. And if you're going to tell an origin story again, at least make it interesting.
Right. My guess actually in Spider-Man's case is that they're not going to be the origin story again.
I hear that they are, but I'm not sure.
Is that what they said? I thought he was first going to appear in another movie.
I'm hoping he does.
Well, either way, let me let me just say one thing that I might retract what I said a little bit. I wouldn't say there's
That's not allowed. Once you say an opinion, you have to back it up.
Oh, it's forever on the internet, Steven. We can just take it out and create a meme.
Pretty much.
Well, I still have my hand on that pawn.
No kickbacksies.
An origin story, just because you know it's going to happen, doesn't mean there is no agency.
Exactly.
That's not actually... That is not factually accurate. Brenna didn't say that. Rather, you know what's going to happen, so the surprise of agency is largely removed.
And that's I think, when you have to lean more heavily on your characters.
Yeah.
Like, way more heavily on making them interesting, making the motivations good, as well as making, like, the actual presentation of the story a little bit new.
Exactly. So, why is agency important? Like, why is this a good thing in story? Why isn't it a good thing just to have the plot dictate the characters? Because the plot probably knows better anyway.
Because my life is not dictated by the things that happen around me.
That's what you think.
My life is dictated by what I do. And I think that that's something that's going to resonate with a reader. They want to see someone actively trying to do stuff. Because if you're... Honestly, if I don't... I don't think I have any friends who are not actively trying to do something because they're boring. I like friends who are actually trying to do things with their lives.
And, right. But there are people who maybe don't care what they're doing or just drifting. And I'm sure they could have interesting stories of their own, even though you shun all of them, Abigail.
I shun all of them.
They feel they have no agency in their lives.
And now they also feel that they don't have my approval. But it will make them sad.
Now I lost, someone's calling me.
All right, I'll pick up that train
Steven,
of thought.
Turn off your phone. Not okay. I'm shunning Steven. You too.
All right, Steven's out of the...
I turned off
Steven's.
My phone. I had a point.
All right.
My point was that even though those people might have interesting stories, but if you feel like there is some, you know, magical plot guiding someone's movements, then they become less real. Mm-hmm. And then they're not believable, and you're like, oh, this isn't a person making decisions. I'm not invested in this character's life. I'm just watching things happen. And it's almost like the supernatural tug of the author that is unintentional.
Hey, that is quite the slight in this game.
And that is, that's actually something that people like discuss a lot, especially in religious spheres when people are arguing religion and what is right and what's not. And a lot of times people bring up this idea of predestination, and it's like, oh, is life all predestined to happen and it can't happen any other way? And there's a lot of different ways to look at that. But if you think of it that way, if you're like, hey, you know, everything that happens was designed to happen and we can't stop it from happening and whatever, it pretty much takes out a lot of motivation for you as a person. Like, I don't know why I would want to live if I believe that.
That actually makes me really curious how cultures that, like, we live in a culture that is ridiculously individualistic and then ridiculously focused on choice and free will. I wonder how free agency is viewed, or free agency, character agency is viewed in cultures that are more predestined in their thought patterns.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to look into.
Well, perhaps we should take a trip to Japan throughout this,
oh, right.
Adventure, Brian.
My huge problem with Japanese RPGs is-
I'll get my TARDIS.
Is as we're talking about the, protagonist agency, which is the primary focus of this discussion, is, in my opinion, horrific in most Japanese RPGs. Mm. These characters are very often young, like, teenage males that are clueless about the world and just kind of go along with whatever their destiny is and kind of just make the generically right choice the whole time and have absolutely no character arcs or interests of their own. They're just ciphers for the story and the player. And
oftentimes their greatest value and what the magical girls with mysterious powers often say to them while gazing into their large blue eyes is, you are a good person. I knew you would do that.
Right. And that's, with no real definition of what that means.
Now, I'm not necessarily saying that Japan has like a predestination sort of mentality. I've never been there and I really don't know that much about their philosophy.
They're definitely much less individualistic than our culture is, though.
Yes, very much less. And so
who knows?
That could tie into it. But I suppose that's more of an example of how it's done poorly as far as we're concerned. So maybe that we should save that for later.
It certainly doesn't translate well to us. But it is an example of it being very different. And sometimes I wonder if I'm just missing how the point of those stories. Like maybe, the character's bad, but these arcs are more interesting, or this world building is interesting, or like the underlying theme. Maybe I'm just hyper-focused on that one thing because, again, I come from a culture that is kind of seen as the primary point.
The point of the story is to explore this individual's choices.
Right.
And that's why I think some of the big time popular TV shows these days, such as Mad Men,
have or Breaking Bad.
Yes, have to do with people making choices and bad ones.
Yep.
Yeah. And the whole, I would say a pitfall with agency, the way you make it believable or the way it needs to be believable in the story, and the way you recognize it, I suppose, is if that choice that the character's making lines up with who they are and what they've been through. So, if you're looking for that in a story or something like that, I would say Breaking Bad is a really good example. You have a bunch of characters in that show making the dumbest choices ever, except all of those choices completely make sense if you put yourself in their shoes with everything they've been through, with everything they believe, with the person that they are. It makes sense. So you're watching it and it's painful because you can see how terrible these choices are and how bad things are going to come from them, but you're also going, well, I would have done that.
Yeah, that is the perfect example of making relatable choices, but also feeling like the characters had some amount of agency. You feel like the characters were put in a tough spot by the plot, but in the end, they didn't just do the conventional thing. I haven't seen the show yet, but from the very first choice that character makes, that is not the conventional response you would have to that situation. It feels like it's his response to that situation.
So are we kind of in agreement that agency is just good and that there's no reason for a story to be told with you know, limited agency?
Pretty much.
That's a great question.
I know there are a lot of,
One example is to go back to Majora's Mask, and this isn't a perfect example, but everyone in that town is completely predestined to do a specific thing. You know, minute by minute, exactly where they're going to walk, who they're going to talk to, and what mistakes they're going to make to get themselves killed in this apocalypse. But to counteract that, you are playing as Link the hero who goes around actively thwarting destiny. And that's kind of the exciting part. Or some of the thought-provoking parts. So it's a story that deals heavily in predestination and a complete lack of agency, but then it tries to subvert that. So maybe, I don't know, do with that what you will.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's an example of a story that I've read or seen or whatnot that takes the idea of agency or predestination, and that's like the point of the story, and it would be worse if the characters were constantly making their own free decisions.
I know. Nothing. It doesn't exactly line up, but I know that I've seen, and there's a whole genre of this. I don't know exactly which movie I'm thinking of, but there was a movie in which basically the idea was you had no choice. And so it's this idea of this character like living through something, and it's like, oh, I'm told that this is going to happen, but you know what? I don't believe in predestination, whatnot. I'm going to make my own decisions. And because of the decisions they happen to make, that thing happened. So it's not, I mean, it's kind of like a mix between having agency and taking it away. Because although, yes, that person is making all their choices, every choice completely lined up, and it happened to end up at that point where it's like this idea of, you know, can you have both? Are all of our choices predestined? And I guess the real question comes, are we making the choices of our own free will, or are we simply responding to our environment? Because technically, responding to your environment is an active thing to do. However, if that's the only thing the character is doing, which is responding, reacting, which is my flaw that I find in so many superhero stories, is that the main character is just responding to the environment.
Superman is the worst about this.
Exactly. It can take away the feeling that they actually have any control. So it's interesting when you explore it that way with one of those movies or books that does take away that control. However, it presents it in a light so that it's like, well, I'm going to distort your view of reality. So that kind of works.
Yeah,
it's a very specific genre.
I thought, Stephen, I don't know how much you remember about it, but Wheel of Time played at this concept a lot.
That's true.
It was, in fact, the entire world goes in a wheel, which is the idea that things happen repeatedly over and over again.
Which is very,
the entire
like,
world loops in on itself.
Kind of taken directly from the Wheel of Samsara.
Yeah, exactly. So it's taken from, that's Hindu, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, taken from that Hindu principle.
Although that was a little more about the life cycle rather than like the fabric of reality.
And the main character's like whole struggle is that idea of whether he should embrace fate. And his thing isn't so much that he doesn't. His whole thing is that he says, okay, like, I'm doing this. But again, he's making a conscious choice to embrace.
Or is he?
That fate.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, you have to make some kind of choice. Us humans just can't fathom not. And then once we realize that we aren't making choices, let's say everything is predestined, then suddenly we are, either our heads explode or we stop caring completely. So let's say that Rand, the hero of that story, stopped caring. He just gave up. Yeah, that's a choice, but from then on, maybe he's just rolling with it. And maybe that's the closest you can get to a realistic representation of accepting a predestined, predetermined path.
Right. That's a good point.
But maybe,
moving on. Yep.
Well, I was just going to say, what if we take a quick step back from this more philosophical version and give it a more writerly bent? Like you said, Abigail, characters reacting to their environment. And I think that's oftentimes what people mean when they say agency in narrative.
Right.
Because that's when some of the most horrifically boring characters are created, Japanese RPG or otherwise, when all they do is they just walk around kind of hanging out and react to the explosions around them. They never think up a new idea. They never say, I want to do this despite the fact that this is happening. They just say, whoa, someone just got killed and someone was Uncle Ben, actually. So, you know, it just goes from there.
So I was going to have us give some examples of agency in stories done well. One that pops to mind because I've been doing it recently, and I talked to you about this earlier, Stephen, is Dragon Age Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with a very, very traditional plot. Basically, a portal has been opened to the world of demons, and demons are pouring out, and you have a special magical power. Your character has a special magical power that can close these portals. So everyone starts assuming you are the herald of the god, and that you are the chosen one, etc. But what's really interesting about how the game gives you choices is, since it's a BioWare RPG, which typically, like, give you a lot of different dialogue trees, and you can choose from a number of predetermined, responses to the different characters, you can, a lot of your choices surrounding whether you're the herald or not, it are choices that allow you to say, no, I am not the herald. I do not accept that I am this religious figure you see. I think that you're basically creating a cult around me, even though I'm just a normal person that happened to fall into this. And it's the idea of being able to interact with that chosen one mentality in a way other than just leading the people, but in a way where you are arguing with them that their concept is even correct that you're the chosen one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a kind of cool way to do it. And, or you could totally accept it. So they are giving you that agency to respond to your own fate and allowing
really
you to. Yeah, allowing you to either say, yep, totally, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go on a power trip, or maybe you can choose to have your character truly believe that he is the herald and have faith in the Almighty, or you can have your character say, this is ridiculous, you people are putting me up on a pedestal, this is so stupid. So
that's what makes RPGs so fun, and that's, I think, what a lot of people don't understand about them. Because a lot of people sit there and they, like, newbies especially, will sit there and go, I don't really know how this works, what can I do? And the real question that you should be asking is, what can't you do? You can do just about anything you want. And that's what makes it such a difficult but also wonderful thing to embrace.
Exactly.
Well, that's a good point. Like, speaking of role-playing and RPGs, in World of Warcraft, everyone is making up their own character stories as they go along. There are no rules. It's all happening in real time. So let's say one example, Shiranna, my mage, meets someone who perfectly fulfills a plot arc she's been having recently. It's like, oh, it's this guild that could completely, you know, change her struggles that she's been having. And then just because I, the player, kind of don't follow up on that, nothing really happens. And it's like, well, that was a dead end. You just kind of wasted your time, assuming you were, you know, watching this as, you know, trying to be entertained from fiction. And so although I have perfect agency, and it's a beautiful thing, everyone has perfect agency at all times, that doesn't necessarily create a good story. It can, but that's why.
It requires you make interesting choices. Because think about plots that the character is allowed to make their own decision. Like, you know, I don't think I want to bring the ring to Sauron. So you just live in Hobbiton until you maybe die and are killed by a ring wraith. And
right.
It's like, that was a boring story. Sometimes there's value to the story forcing interesting.
And sometimes there are things that you need to, because there are sometimes storytellers in World of Warcraft, but oftentimes it's just people, you know, going off the cuff, whoever they run into. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need, you know, those plot points to be set up, those ideas to say, hey, this should eventually lead to a betrayal. And it's right. like, well, so you're just dictating this character's motivation. You're not no longer giving him the freedom to choose what he wants to do. And it's like, well, eventually you kind of have to make those concessions, or at least be very careful in the choices that you allow that character to make, because otherwise nothing's going to add up and it's not going to make a concise and entertaining story.
That's exactly. that's one of the reasons that I'm so sorry I'm coughing all the time, by the way. that's one of the reasons that authors tend to choose the characters that they choose. Cause you'll live your life and you're like, hey, you know, I'm here, whatever. I had pizza for dinner last night. That was kind of awesome. But then you're reading these books and stuff and you're watching TV shows about all these characters who are doing these crazy awesome things. However, you only see a very small segment of their life.
Right.
You don't see all of it. You only see the interesting parts of it. And that's kind of what makes up, at least when you have a pre-planned story like that, that you're consuming from someone else, they purposely choose people. They write characters who are the type of person who has an adventure. Usually there is something that happens to them externally to get the story started. They first make their response and then they begin responding on their own. But you know, they have their dull moments and the author doesn't show it. Two, mm-hmm. If there's a character who simply just is dull, we just don't use them.
Right.
Because they're not interesting.
And I think that we were talking about what could the negatives of having full agency be. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those are the idea that choosing to not go on the adventure at all is one of
exactly.
those problems. And that's something that games have a difficulty with is, you know, once someone plays in a video game, they say, oh, I can do anything. All right. I want to, you know, walk off in this random direction and not do that at all. And sometimes mm-hmm. that works in a game like The Elder Scrolls when they create a whole world to support that. But sometimes the game creators want to spend all their time creating content about this story to go on. And there isn't going to be any content to see if you don't go on that story. So it kind of, the decisions need to be, I read a really good editorial recently about decision making in games. And the idea that you don't necessarily need to give players all the choices. You need to give players the choices that they most want to make. You need to create the content and the choices in the agency that is important to them to see your story. Because all games are is a bunch of, it's a bunch of mirrors and smoke, or smoke and mirrors rather, to create an illusion of freedom. No one really has freedom in a game. And why games are such an interesting study of this is because the closest you get to, or the only way you have interactive agency as a participant and as a reader of a narrative.
Mm-hmm. And really, so, it's the same with any story. It's how well can the author disguise the seams that are stitching everything together. Like,
right.
for example, you know that Anakin Skywalker is going to turn to the dark side in these three movies and become Darth Vader. I think that was an example of those seams being poorly sewn together, where there are leaps in logic. There are you actively watch the character of Anakin Skywalker kind of be compromised and do unbelievable things to leap towards this insane fate he has to go, you know, end mm-hmm. up at. And then there are maybe more. Tons of examples of that being done smoothly to where you don't even think about it being the fate that was always going to happen. It just seemed to be what happened.
Right. But Inquisition, for example, Dragon Age is another example of how in a game they create several choices for you to be able to react to the story that's happening to you, but do it in a way that can remain consistent with the type of character you have. You do want to go on the story. That is the point of the story being told, but you can have your character react to it in a way that either he believes that he is the chosen, or he is doing it for his mm-hmm. own personal gain, or he's just doing it for the order of the universe. It allows you to go on the story they want while retaining some character agency, which is interesting.
Like, if I was playing that, I could easily see myself saying, everyone's holding me up as this figure. I don't even want to be that figure. Why is there no option for me to argue? And like, that was right. so important. It seems like they built that fundamentally into the dialogue system.
Right, but there isn't an option to say, I don't want to lead this Inquisition at all, because that would just end the game.
Yeah, and hopefully I wouldn't want to do that, understanding what I'm in for.
Yeah, so focusing on protagonist agency in specific, what are some examples you think of this being done well in fiction?
Death Note.
Death Note. Yeah.
It's always one of my favorite examples of this because it starts out, you could say that it starts out by the plot dropping something in front of Light and he happens to pick up this book and say, oh, yep. Look, you know, this thing happened. Now here's what I do. But the great thing about that story is it starts even further before with Ryuk dropping the book into the human world. And everything that happens in that show is completely chosen by the characters.
Like, Ryuk did not accidentally drop his book.
He did not accidentally drop his book. He purposefully dropped it into the human world to say, let's see what happens with this. Right. And that's one reason that show is so interesting because, like, it doesn't matter what happens in that show. Every single thing was done completely on purpose by someone.
And it even what was so interesting about that show is normally you find the magical item, the magical creature tells you what you need to do with it, and the exposition. But Ryuk's exposition was, you can do literally whatever you want with this. I don't care. And that really set up the whole show's idea, which is this is basically a sandbox to see what happens when this thing happens to this world.
Pretty fun. In this case,
the Death Note being.
And so there are lots of really exciting and crazy plot twists and, you know, thought-provoking scenes and all that jazz. But oftentimes I found that I couldn't think up a better idea than Light could. Like, I knew what he wanted to accomplish, but he was trying his best. You know, he was always in character, always trying to, like, strive to beat L. And oftentimes you're like, man, you're right. You are stuck here. Man, how are you going to think your way out of this one? And then he does. And it's like, oh, he really found the one loophole. And he's really trying his best. It's not like he forgot about this because the plot demanded that he didn't think about it because it would have added lots of complications. You know, they really thought that stuff through. And I think that readers or viewers kind of respect that inherently.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So any other examples of agency being done well?
I liked, how about The Last of Us?
Sure.
I'm going to choose that one because, and I swear I won't spoil anything this time. I refuse to do that.
Wait, did you, yeah, you already spoiled, was it that one that you spoiled last time?
No, I was just making a reference to my Supernatural spoiling.
Oh, okay.
I think I spoiled the Fault in Our Stars. Something.
Yes, you spoiled the Fault in Our Star.
Well, The Last of Us is close to, I don't know. I apologize for that. No excuses. But
that
The Last
one actually is a really interesting one too.
Because it feels like The Last of Us could easily be one of those, all right, why are you, you know, helping out this little girl? Why do you care about her? Why is she sticking around with you? Why is any of this happening? How are you surviving? Why aren't you just doing this? And those questions didn't really come up because everything seemed, well, in this situation, all right, let's try it. I get where you're coming from. Almost, I guess you could say Breaking Bad style in that way. I mean, I don't know if you agree. Abigail, did you saw that story through, right?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, yeah.
I actually kind of disagree with you, though.
Really?
Yeah, I think Joel just did what he is told through that entire game, pretty much. He didn't really make until, like, the end.
That's like, the one that really strikes out to me with that one. But, I mean, even if he kind of was,
he was just on the run the whole time. The only real choice he made was pretty much at the end.
That's
up until
true.
That point. The other choice he made was, you know, trying to leave Ellie behind at that one point. Again, not big spoilers, but when he tried to get her to safety and leave, and then he ended up having to change his mind about that. But, like, especially early on, basically someone said, you're stuck with doing this. Like, it was more of the hero's journey type thing.
Well, the thing is, I'm not trying to say that that was a character with an extreme amount of superbly realized agency.
Okay.
My point was to say, you'd think that that would be one of those plots where you're frustrated because you're watching these things just happen before you. And it's like, come on, come on. But I never went, come on, through that game. It always felt heartfelt. Sure. It always felt like, yep, that's Joel. I knew he'd do that. You know, like, he didn't have a lot of hard choices to make, though he definitely had some near the end. But maybe that's
an
example.
What interests me, though, I think that that is a good example of a character with very limited agency conveying that well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
But kind of what interests me are stories experimenting more like Death Note did, wherein the story is decided by the character. Like, this story would not happen if this character didn't make a choice. And we've touched upon this briefly, I think, in previous episodes, and we decided that's typically the villain. And that's why Death Note works, is the villain is the protagonist. Typically the villain is deciding, hey, I want to take over the world, or hey, I want to do this thing. They're creating a plot where there is nothing. Mm-hmm. Well, heroes typically react to a plot that someone else put into motion.
Yeah. They find a problem and they need to solve it.
And I really enjoy stories wherein the protagonist creates a plot out of nothing rather than reacts to a plot happening to him. And Death Note did a very good job of that. And I can't,
that's perhaps why
it's a tougher thing to come up with.
It's perhaps why stories like Indiana Jones are so fun, because
he's hunting an artifact.
Usually it's like, you know what I want to do today? Go on an adventure. And then he runs out the door and finds big problems, of course, and things that he gets emotionally invested in.
And then he makes them bigger.
But the seed for the whole story is like, I want to do this thing. I could sit around and teach kids in my classroom, but nope.
You know what other story I think can be fairly good at this?
What's that?
Is the Kingkiller Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
At least up until this point. Abigail, have you read those?
No.
Read them.
They're really good.
Okay.
Basically, you'll like them.
It's basically they follow the story of Kvothe, this one guy, and it's almost a slice of life fantasy version of his life. There might be a really common plot thread through all of it, but it's just him going through school, like this magical academy, and doing a whole lot of different adventures as he does this. But most of the adventures he sets out to do. Either he says, I want to get my, I want to become a prestigious bard here, or I want to go join this mercenary camp and go exploring this direction, or I want to go do this thing. So he's like creating his own ideas and his own adventures, deciding he wants to join up with the school, deciding he wants to do, I can't remember all of the adventures in that book, but most of them are started by his will, because he is a very strong-willed character, rather than him reacting to like some diabolical wizard who's trying to steal his eyebrows or something.
What?
I don't know. Just coming up with
I completely agree with that. It's what made that such a, even though it wasn't a whimsical setting, it felt whimsical because it felt like you were free as the wind with Kvothe. He's just going to go and see if he can survive this life he wants to live. That's a good example.
So what are some examples of it being done poorly?
Well, I gave the Anakin Skywalker one.
Yep. Gave the JRPG one. We might have already covered
I feel like
this
we gave a ton of them.
Yeah,
like,
I think we made
we started with it
lot.
Being poor.
That's unfortunately how we roll. We like to end on the positive. So yeah, I think we did that. Hopefully, everyone listening gets an idea of what we're talking about here now that we're to the end. There was a quick ending segment I wanted to do. Shouldn't take too long. It's a test for you two. I'm going to give you kind of a plot setup, and you need to come up with a way that
cooperatively, or are we bitter
cooperatively,
enemies?
Okay. Cooperatively, come up with a way that the character could show agency in this and not just go along with what the plot is creating.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Yes.
Woohoo.
All right. You are a grocery store clerk who has recently discovered that your manager is actually a cow and plans to remove all dairy products from the world forever. Your best friend, secretly a duck, which is actually incidental to the plot, but an interesting aside, tells you there is a way to stop him and insists you meet with his group of underground resistance fighters.
So now we have to figure out a way to give our...
How does your protagonist have agency in this situation?
We're both just staring.
I can repeat the problem.
No, I've got it. I've got this down. Okay, so to me, not showing agency would be to say, whoa, Duck, you're right. What in the world? I'm dazzled and slightly intimidated by this underground. You know, let's meet all of the various animals, no doubt, who all have different roles. And this the fox is the one who cracks the safes and blah, blah, blah. And then we overthrow the cow empire and no one ever knows because we couldn't let the world know the cow was running the store. Ending. Boring. No agency.
Yep.
So how can we give our grocery clerk agency?
Right, because you came up with the whole plot. And that's probably where a lot of writers would end to say, oh, that is a cohesive plot. That works.
Well, one way to give him agency is to give him something that he wants independent of the story.
Yes.
So like, you know, I'm the grocery store clerk and I'm 25 and I'm still working in the grocery store and I really want to, you know, be successful or like, you know, do something with my music or I don't know, something besides overthrow this cow. However, shoot, this cow is going to take over the world and that means that there's not going to be anyone to buy my music. I should probably do something about this.
That's true. Something else you could do is start stocking up on dairy products, and then when the cow destroys all the other ones, you're going to make a killing.
Yeah, exactly. That would work too.
Okay, or one thing, what if our protagonist is lactose intolerant? So he's all on board with this plan.
Yeah.
And so he decides to...
give him a good motivation.
Maybe he works his way through the duck. Actually, what we could even do is he works his way through the duck underground, and for a long time, the readers think that's what he's doing, but he actually wants to betray all of them and make a killing on the situation. And
so he plays the role of the guy who becomes their hero, but it's all to betray the
cow.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
And then ends up getting a promotion. And the sequel is him and the cow who have this really like decent relationship between the two. And they kind of have an almost an Emperor Palpatine Darth Vader thing going on. And that's what the sequel's about.
There you go. That is a way to give your character agency. All right. There's been a rash of pineapple murders recently. The details are still unclear, so many conflicting witnesses. And it's your job to investigate and get to the bottom of it. The first lead is an abandoned pineapple factory on the edge of town. What does your protagonist do?
Wait, what? I missed some of that.
There's been a rash of pineapple murders recently, and it's your job to investigate these and get to the bottom of it. Your very first lead that is put on your desk is an abandoned pineapple factory in the edge of town.
So wait, pineapples are being murdered?
It is unclear.
All right, then.
Either that or people are murdering people with pineapples.
In this case, considering the job that I'm working, I mean, I'm investigating it. That's my job. Mm-hmm. So I'm either going to go ahead and follow the lead.
Yes.
Because although that is, it seems kind of plot driven, but like that's what my character does. Or I will continue looking for other leads. I can weigh this lead and I can say, oh, well, it doesn't really seem like a great one. I'm going to go find a different one. Or I can follow the lead and then, show some little agency there because something happens, like somebody walks out and says like, oh, these are not the droids you're looking for. And I'm saying like, whatever, sneak around back. I don't know. Do something like that.
Steven, I think you were onto something.
Whoa.
And Abigail, you had some good points too.
I never even said anything.
You did though.
What?
Or maybe it was Abigail. One of you said, all right, so the protagonist looks down at this, sees the first lead. I like that instead of investigating the lead, he says, wait, pineapples are being murdered.
Ooh, that's a good point. And so the next scene is scene jump. He's at a psychiatrist's office.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he would investigate instead of just blindly accepting that, okay, I guess this episode is me investigating pineapple murder.
I'd love for him to get halfway there and then slowly his car stops.
Right.
And, that would be kind of fun.
And just, wait a minute.
He pulls out his phone.
Pineapples are being murdered?
Exactly. So I think that's a good example.
He finds out that he was high when he was given the assignment.
Yeah, see, there's an example. He's actually a drug addict, and his motivation is getting more drugs.
So should he continue, he doesn't want to lose his job, so now he has to hide this. And that's a bunch of more interesting problems, this dumb pineapple thing.
Exactly. That was basically just my idea to address the, procedural crime drama, where people, the first lead that comes up, they just immediately chase after.
Have you been listening to writing excuses?
I like the idea of looking around for something else first. Because, if I'm presented with a problem, I'm not just going to do the first thing I think of. I'm going to think of other options first.
But so often people, partially because they want to cut out filler in these shows, which makes sense. It's just like every lead they get is the perfect lead to take and they just go chase after it.
Exactly.
It would be interesting to see them come up with a variety of leads and see which one they go
for. That just made me realize how hard and boring it could be to write procedurals.
Oh, yes. I do not. None of this is.
That reminds me of the paperwork problem. That's one reason that, what was it called? It was like Shaun of the Dead. Something.
I don't remember.
Not Hot Rod. Anyways, there's a Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz. Hot Fuzz was really highly praised by cops because they showed the procedural happening correctly, in which it is, let's do something. Okay, now we have 8 hours of paperwork associated with it. and that's kind of funny.
Yeah, exactly. And through none of this am I intending to just lampoon or make fun of people who write predictable plots, especially for TV shows. Plots are not easy to write, especially if you have to write a ton of them.
I don't think that Abigail and I are doing a great job of lampooning them. We're like, the obvious thing would be to do that.
Exactly. I just think it shows how easy that is to come, and in my opinion, it's not always a very interesting outcome.
Yeah,
exactly. And that's where my favorite advice from Orson Scott Card, which I will quote every time that I get the chance. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite advice comes into play, in which he says, specifically to endings, when thinking about your ending, take your first idea and throw it out. Take your second idea, throw it out. Take your third idea, throw it out. By four or five, you're starting to get a little bit original. And I think that comes with creating interesting plots as well, because your character is faced with a problem. That happens. Life hands you problems. And you have to sort through your ideas and you go, okay, which one is the most interesting? And usually by the time you get to four or five, so like we only went through two options. We went through the two most most obvious ideas for each of those stories. But had we kept thinking about it, we probably would have come up with something very, very interesting, because it's like, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that immediately. Therefore, let's go ahead and use it, can kind of make a more interesting story for my reader.
Yeah. I think just a really important thing about character agency in general is so many plots can be leading questions. And it's much more interesting to have plots be open questions and have the character create something out of that plot rather than just answer the obvious leading question he's given. And that's what agency really allows characters to do.
Yep.
Light did something that the normal protagonist would not do. He did something radical. He just started killing people in Death Note. That is not the typical response you get.
And it doesn't just mean you should have your characters do random things, because the whole point of this
It wasn't random. It made sense.
I'm not saying that was random.
Yeah.
I'm just saying when you say, what you should do is have your characters start murdering people. It's like, no, not necessarily.
I am in the Elder Scrolls line of thought where in every chance you get, you just go on a rampage and kill everyone because you can.
Right.
But yeah, that's an excellent point, Steve. It still needs to be grounded.
The real point of agency, as far as I'm concerned, is to make these people feel like people. And just to stay in whatever character they have.
Yep, exactly. So they don't, basically it's the idea of not compromising the character for the plot.
Yeah.
And a very important part of that is being able to allow the character to create decisions within your plot structure and not constantly bending them to fit whatever plot you're telling.
Because you can't let the character ruin the plot either. It can go both ways.
Yep. All right. I think that was a pretty good discussion of, agency.
Probably.
Next time, we're going to discuss agents.
Well, so we're going to take our first episode and throw it out. And then we're going to take our second episode and throw it out. And then we're going to take our third episode and throw it out.
And then by that point, we're all just tired and angry.
Yeah,
and
I don't think Orson Scott Card is a podcaster to say.
Well, see, now our episodes are finally getting a little bit interesting. Our first four were, like, super boring. Yeah. Wait, I mean, just kidding. They were actually really good.
They were pretty good. All right. And that'll do it for this week's episode. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are Third Person Show. I'm always so scared I'm going to say it for the love of books, even though I don't have that written here. Our email is thirdpersonshow@gmail.com. On YouTube, we are Third Person, a storytelling podcast. You can also find our production company, Whales Are Whales, at whalesarewhales.com. We make a lot of awesome shows like this with a lot of awesome people like us. If you want to find us personally on the Twitters out there, I am Lord Meldor. Steven, you are Steven Kelly 180.
That's me!
And Abigail, wow, you really threw me off there. And Abigail is the Thinky Reader. Anything else you want people to find you on the internet, Abigail?
AimlessHyperbole.com is my only really other place. I mean, you can find me at Facebook at AimlessHyperbole as well.
So. You can also soon find Abigail on the Whales Are Whales podcast.
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah,
me too is there. She graces us with her presence.
Yeah. And if you want to learn how to roleplay in World of Warcraft, send me a message and I will personally introduce you and teach you how to play.
All right, I will do that.
I just want
how much do you charge for that?
Well, generally my fee is 16 pineapples, but I think might be a taboo subject considering the recent rash of murders.
It implicates
you. Yeah,
so I really don't think I should
switch to dairy products.
Oh boy. Oh,
get them before they're gone.
Get them before they're gone.
I kind of think I need to start writing prompts every episode though our listeners to work off of, because, you know, I think I've got a knack for this.
Sure,
all right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Abigail. It was interesting. That is a diplomatic way to address
the question. Is how many prompts did you throw out before you arrived at those?
You would be none, so.
I can't even imagine what your fourth and fifth ones were then.
Yeah, this is why I probably shouldn't be like writing fiction or anything. Anyway, we need an outro this week, and for this week, I'm going to throw it to Abigail to do our outro. Abigail, take it away.
I have taken this podcast, and it is mine!
That's way better than all of my actors.
I'm going to add like a reverb to that. And
Beautiful and terrible!
Dramatic echo. Maybe like some slowing music behind it.